needed at the bar.
I'm needed at the bar, Adrian told the Parishes. I'll be right back. At the bar, the blondes were splitting a VIP order, and at the far end, by the cherries and the citrus, Adrian's champagne beckoned. She took a long swill, appraising the situation. Duncan was MIA. It was much commented upon that Duncan had the world's sturdiest bladder. He never used the restroom during service. Christo swaggered up to Adrian and said,
I need a vodka grapefruit and a glass of Zin.
Who do I look like?
The assistant manager, he said.
Where's Duncan? Adrian asked. Christo shrugged.
I just work here, lady. You gonna get my drinks?
One of the blondes whipped around. She was one of the most attractive women Adrian had ever seen, if judged by the standards that certain American men tended to use. Lots of natural blonde, lots of natural tan, lots of natural breast.
I think his girlfriends pissed at him, she said. She snatched him away.
The other blonde, who was wearing a blue sequined halter top, sipped her apple martini.
We were just talking to him.
So he's gone? Adrian said. And where's Delilah?
Night off, Christo said.
He grinned at the blondes. Okay, fine, Adrian said. She was thinking many things at once. She was the assistant manager. This was, if looked at from a very warped and immature point of view, partially her fault, and it had always seemed like fun to be a bartender. Not to mention it gave her an excuse to blow off the Parishes. Adrian slipped behind the bar. She felt like she was about to drive an expensive race car. Look at all the stuff. The sink, the fridge, the rows of mixers, the gun, the fruit, the bottles in the well, the bottles of wine. She picked up a bottle of red and scrutinized the label. Zin, you said?
Zin.
Well, this is Syrah, Adrian said. She eyed the podium. It was clear. I wonder where the Zin is.
I'd like it this century, Christo said.
Then he checked to see if either of the blondes had laughed. No such luck.
Ah, fuck it, I'll be back.
Adrian. Thatcher's hand smacked the blue granite. She felt like, well, she felt like she'd just been caught in her parents' liquor cabinet. One of her heels snagged on the rubber hex mat, and she stumbled backward. Her ass hit the rack of bottles behind her.
I was trying to help, she said.
Table 20, he hissed. Take Wolf to the water.
Wolf threw the fries, one by one, to the seagulls. Adrian found herself surrounded by big rats with wings, cawing and pecking. She glanced longingly back at the restaurant, at Grayson eating his chips and dip, at Duncan returned to his post, wooing his new lady friends. When the fries were gone, Wolf threw rocks in the water.
Don't you want to go back up? Adrian asked.
He didn't answer. She tried another tack. Where do you live? He didn't answer. Cat got your tongue? She asked. He looked at her quizzically, and she could see his mind working. Was she talking about a real cat? But he wasn't curious enough to ask. He sat in the wet sand, shed his dock shoes, rolled up the pant legs of his khakis, and waded into the water. Adrian wished she had the words to reel him back in. She was afraid to turn around to face Grayson and Darla. What if Wolf went under? She couldn't very well return him to his grandparents soaking wet. She wandered down to the beach, saying, I hope the sharks aren't out there tonight, Wolf. Or the stinging jellyfish. That got him out, though his pant legs were wrinkled and his seat was damp and sandy. Do you want to go back up? Adrian asked.
No.
Why not?
I just don't.
Don't you want to be with your grandparents?
No.
Why not?
I miss my mom.
I miss my mom, too, Adrian said. Wolf tossed another rock.
Where is she?
She's dead, Adrian said.
It was easy to tell the truth to a child.
Wolf said nothing, but he let her take his hand and lead him back to the restaurant.
The foot bath they had used after family meal came in handy. Adrian rinsed Wolf's feet and squidged them back into his dock shoes. Then, with her sitting next to him, he choked down a roll smothered with butter. Darla was elated.
"I've never seen him eat like this before," she said. "Can we bring you home with us?"
At the end of first seating, Grayson tipped Adrian $200. She tucked the bills into her change purse. That, she said to Thatcher, was above and beyond the call of duty.
Nothing is above and beyond the call of duty, he said. Not here.
No sooner had the Parrishes walked out the door than Karen yanked Adrian into the wine cave.
They're still here, Karen said.
Who?
Those girls. They finished dinner 20 minutes ago, and they're still here.
You need to calm down, Adrian said.
I can't handle this, Karen said.
She plopped down on an untapped keg of beer.
I cannot handle being the bartender's girlfriend.
He's not doing anything wrong, Adrian said.
He's flirting, Karen said. You noticed how he put in a VIP order? When I saw that, I flipped. Two nobodies, never been here before, and he VIPs them? I let him have it.
What did he say?
He admitted he was flirting. He said it was part of his job.
Well, it is, sort of. Isn't it?
You're not helping, Karen said. You put them at the bar in the first place. You should have put them on three. I would have waited on them myself, and they'd be at the Rose and Crown by now.
Okay, Adrian said. Next time there are beautiful, unescorted women without a reservation, I will put them at three.
Do you promise? Karen said. Promise me.
I promise, Adrian said. Second seating brought the Lefroys, Mr. and Mrs., along with Tyler and his younger sister, a girl of about 13 who had the worst case of adolescence Adrian had ever seen. She was a chubby girl, stuffed into a pink satin dress that would have looked awful on anyone. She wore braces and glasses and had greasy hair of no determinate color forced back in an unforgiving ponytail. Tyler looked mortified to be seen with her, not to mention his parents. Mrs. Lefroy had dyed blonde hair and the defined biceps of a woman who spent all her free time at the gym, and Mr. Lefroy was easily 6'5", balding, bespectacled, lurching. Thatcher slapped Tyler on the back and made some perfunctory and much exaggerated comment about what a stellar employee he was. Then he handed four menus to Adrian and said, "Seat them, table 20.
"I never eat out," Mr. Lefroy said on his way through the dining room.
"No," Adrian said. "Why is that?"
"Well, when you've seen what I've seen..."
"On the job, you mean?"
"The cross-contamination dangers alone," he said.
"Dad," Tyler said, "please shut up. People are trying to eat." Adrian let the family settle, then she handed out menus. "Enjoy your meal," she said. The Lefroy's table was assigned to Spillman, but within minutes he found Adrian at the bar, where she was drinking her champagne and trying to eavesdrop on Duncan and the two bombshells.
"Lefroy wants you," Spillman said.
"You're kidding."
"He wants your opinion on the menu," Spillman said. "My opinion apparently doesn't matter."
Adrian returned to table 20 with her champagne. She complimented the sister, Rochelle, on a rhinestone bracelet she was wearing, and she asked Tyler about his finals. He made a flicking motion with his hand.
"Ace them."
Mr. Lefroy pointed to Adrian's glass.
"Now, what's that you're drinking?"
"A glass of the Lauren Perrier Brut Rosé." Mr. Lefroy looked to his wife.
"You want one of those?"
"Sure," Mrs. Lefroy said. "It's my lucky day."
"One of those," Mr. Lefroy said. "And what is fresh on this menu?"
"It's all fresh," Adrian said. "The fish is delivered every afternoon. The vegetables are hand-selected by our..."
"That's nice," Mr. Lefroy said. "But what is really fresh?"
When Adrian returned to the podium, Thatcher was grinning.
What? She said. Lefroy can't keep his eyes off you. Shut up. It's because you're so damn fetching in that dress.
For the first time all night, Adrian felt the electricity that had buzzed up her spine that morning when Thatcher whistled. She was beginning to think she'd imagined it. The Lefroy family had a wonderful meal. In the end, they all ordered the steak, which was not fresh, but aged, though Adrian did not point this out. Adrian asked Thatcher if he wanted to comp the meal, as it was Tyler's family.
Can't, Thatcher said. The man is the health inspector.
The two blondes unstuck themselves from the bar at 10 o'clock. Off to the boarding house, they said.
Cute bartender, the girl in the blue halter said.
He needs to lose the uptight girlfriend.
Okay. Bye-bye, Adrian said. She was relieved to see them go. It had been another very, very long night, and it wasn't over yet. At 11, Thatcher helped her bounce, and this was something new. Adrian relayed the saga of Karen and Duncan as they watched the headlights pull in.
The bar is popular for two reasons, he said. Duncan and our indifference.
Our indifference?
Well, Fiona's indifference. She hates the bar. She thinks it's all about the money.
Isn't it all about the money?
Oh, yes, he said. Yes, it is.
At midnight, the crackers came out of the kitchen. Parmesan rosemary. Adrian took a handful and offered the basket to Thatch. He nodded at the kitchen door.
I'm going to eat, he said. I'll pick you up tomorrow night at 7.
Where are we going? Adrian asked.
Where aren't we going? He said.
Chapter 5. Night Off. Notre Dame Magazine, Volume 67. September 2004. Green and Gold Goes Blue. Thatcher Smith, B.A., 1991, believes there are two kinds of people in the world, those who eat to live and those who live to eat. Until he was 22 years old, Smith, owner of the Blue Bistro, a highly successful restaurant on Nantucket Island in Massachusetts, categorized himself as the former.
I grew up in South Bend, a town that is virtually devoid of cuisine. My mother left the family when I was young, and my father and brothers and I subsisted on shredded wheat, bologna sandwiches, and pizza, and Burger King, of course, but nothing you would ever call cuisine.
So how did this native of South Bend and Notre Dame graduate end up in the restaurant business? He gives credit to the girl next door. Fiona Kemp, daughter of Hobson Kemp, a professor of electrical engineering at Notre Dame since 1966, lived four houses down from Smith growing up.
There's a picture of Fiona and I on our first day of kindergarten, Smith says. I can't remember not knowing her.
Because of a childhood illness, Ms. Kemp could not participate in sports, so she turned her energies to an indoor activity, cooking.
She was always making something. I remember when we were about 12, she made a chocolate swirl cheesecake sitting in a puddle of raspberry sauce. She invited some of the boys from the neighborhood over to eat it, but it was so elegant. None of us had the heart.
After graduating from John Adams High School together in 1987, Smith and Kemp went their separate ways. Smith enrolled at Notre Dame, where he majored in economics. He planned to join his father and brothers at what he modestly calls the family store, Smith Carpets and Flooring, which has 5 outlets in South Bend and nearby Mishawaka. Meanwhile, Kemp enrolled at the prestigious Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. She wanted to fulfill her dream of becoming a chef. Smith and Kemp reunited on Nantucket Island in October 1992.
Fiona had been working on the island for 2 years at that point, Smith says, and she felt ready for her own place. She convinced me to visit, and once I saw the island, I decided to leave South Bend behind. I sold my interest in the business to my brothers and took the money and invested it
in Fiona, I knew there was no way she would fail. Indeed, not. Smith and Kemp bought a rundown restaurant on the beach that had formerly served burgers and fried clams, and they transformed it into the Blue Bistro, with seating for over 100 facing the Atlantic Ocean. The only seats harder to procure than the seats at the Blue Granite Bar are the four tables out in the sand where the bistro serves its now famous version of seafood fondue, or as the kitchen fondly refers to it, the all-you-can-eat fried shrimp special. Many of Miss Kemp's offerings are twists on old classics, like the fondue. She serves impeccable steak frites, a lobster club sandwich, and a sushi plate, which features a 2-inch-thick slab of locally caught bluefin tuna. Ms. Kemp relies on fresh local produce to keep her plates alive. Ms. Kemp's cooking has been celebrated in such places as Bon Appetit and the Chicago Tribune. She was named one of the country's hottest chefs by Food and Wine in 1998. All this notoriety comes despite the fact that she is, in Thatcher Smith's words, a highly private person. Fiona doesn't give interviews. She doesn't allow herself to be photographed. She doesn't believe in the new craze of chef as celebrity. Fiona just wants to feed people. It has never been about the reviews or about the money, even. For Fiona, it's all about love. It's about giving back. For Thatcher Smith, running the Blue Bistro is a dream come true. A dream he wasn't even aware he harbored. I love every minute of my work, he says. The fast pace, the high energy, the personal interaction, the management challenges, and yes, I love the food. Once I tried a plate of Fiona's steak frites, I learned the difference between tasting and eating. I knew I would never hit the drive-thru at Burger King again. I became a person who lives to eat. 2. Addie12177 at hotmail.com. From Dr. Don at toothache.com. Date: June 7th, 2005, 7:33 p.m. Subject: possible dates. How about the last week in July? Love, love. Adrian was so nervous when she woke up on Wednesday morning that her ears were ringing. Where are we going? Where aren't we going? The blue dress hung in the closet on a padded hanger that Adrian had borrowed from Karen without her permission. When Adrian had gotten home the night before, she went online and looked up the article about Thatcher in Notre Dame magazine. Then she lay in bed for nearly an hour thinking about it. It gave her a better sense of Thatcher than the other articles. He came from a family of men who worked in carpet and flooring. His mother had left, maybe for that very reason. Too many men, too much carpet. Adrian wondered about Fiona's childhood illness, just as she wondered about everything else regarding Fiona. She had liked the story about the cheesecake. She could imagine Thatcher and his grubby 12-year-old friends staring at the marbled cheesecake sitting in a bright pink raspberry pond, as though it were a work of modern art that they were being asked to understand. Adrian heard the swish of Karen's bare feet against the floorboards of the hall, then the espresso machine. She looked at her clock. It was 9. She had hoped to sleep in, but there was no chance. Too much on her mind. By the time Adrian made it out to the kitchen, Karen was alone, sipping her short black, flipping through the pages of Cosmo. Where's Duncan? Adrian asked. I have no idea. Adrian eyed the glossy pages of the magazine. Karen was reading an article entitled, Is Your Relationship on the Rocks? 10 Early Warning Signs. Are you fighting? Adrian asked. I have no idea, Karen said again. Oh, Adrian said. You're off tonight? Karen asked. Adrian poked her head into the fridge for some juice. Yep. You're going out? Adrian got a glass out of the cabinet, steeling herself. What was the first thing Karen had ever told her? I know the dirt on every person who eats at the bistro and every person who works there.
I am, Adrian said. With Thatch?
Yes, Adrian said. She let out a long exhale. It was a relief having it spoken. What do you think?
I'm psyched to work the front, Karen said. It's such a breeze.
Adrian recognized that as some kind of slight, but she let it go. What do you think about me and Thatch?
I think you should be careful.
Adrian poured her juice and sat down across the table from Karen. Karen was not exactly her friend, but Adrian knew she wouldn't lie. Why? Adrian said. Has he been with a lot of women?
No, Karen said.
He hasn't gone on a date in the 12 years I've known him. She slapped her magazine shut.
And that's why you should be careful.
Thatcher arrived at 5 to 7 bearing a bouquet of red Gerbera daisies. He looked like an old-fashioned suitor. He was dressed in a jacket and tie, holding out the flowers, and he had a very clean-shaven look about him. Haircut, she realized after studying him for a second. Adrian was glad Karen was at work. She might have teased this version of Thatcher Smith. Earnest, fresh-faced, with flowers. On his first date in 12 years. Look at you, Adrian said. She carried the flowers into the kitchen, where she hunted for a vase. No vase. She filled one of the unused sunflower canisters with water. Thatcher followed her in.
Look at you, he said. That dress. I can't get over it.
Good, Adrian said, smiling. She grabbed a gray pashmina, borrowed from Karen, with her permission, and checked her silver-beaded cocktail purse. Ditto. Lipstick, dental floss, a wad of cash, just in case. Let's go. Thatcher took her to 21 Federal, in the heart of town. The building was one of those old whaling houses. Inside, it had a lot of dark wood and antique mirrors. The woman working the front wore Janet Russo and had a professional manicure. She smiled when they came in and said in a flirty voice,
Thatcher Smith, the rumors are true.
Thatcher put a finger to his lips and the woman said, You don't want anyone to know you're here? Would you like to sit in the back?
Even better, Thatcher said, pointing at the ceiling.
The woman led them up the staircase.
Siberia it is, she said.
The upstairs of the restaurant was even more charming than downstairs, Adrian thought. There was a darling little bar and a couple of deuces by the front window that looked down onto Federal Street. Thatcher pulled out Adrian's chair, then seated himself. The hostess whispered in Thatcher's ear. He nodded. A second later, an elderly bartender appeared with their drinks. Veuve Clicquot for Adrian, and a club soda with lime for Thatcher.
Our compliments, Mr. Smith, said the bartender. Thank you, Frank.
The hostess forgot our menus, Adrian whispered.
No, she didn't, Thatcher said. I've ordered for us already.
Adrian tried to relax. She gazed out the window at the cobblestone street below.
Okay, she said. You're the boss.
Thatcher lifted his glass to her.
Thank you for coming out with me tonight, he said. I don't do this enough.
Adrian clinked his glass and sipped her champagne.
From what I hear, you don't do it at all. You've been talking to Karen.
Of course.
She thinks she knows everything about me, Thatcher said. But she doesn't.
The hostess approached the table again and whispered something else in Thatcher's ear. The whispering was in very bad taste. Adrian would never do it. Thatcher said,
Not tonight. Sorry. You'll tell them I'm sorry. But not tonight.
The hostess disappeared. Thatcher turned to Adrian.
The chef wants to prepare us a tasting menu.
That's nice, Adrian said.
It's a commitment, Thatcher said. And
I have other plans for us.
Do you now? Adrian said.
Yes, I do.
A few minutes later, the bartender, who was keeping a shadowy profile behind the bar, presented two plates.
The portobello mushroom with Parmesan pudding, he announced.
Thatcher lit up. He spun the plates.
This is the best first course on the island, he said.
If you're not eating at work, Adrian said.
Right, Thatcher said.
Adrian brandished her knife and fork. She was used to eating family meal at 5:30, and now, nearly 2 hours later, she was starving. She tasted a bite of the mushroom, then a little of the creamy, cheesy pudding. The dish was perfect. Thatcher stared at his plate, smiling at the mushroom as though he expected it to smile back.
Was he nervous?
I read an article about you this morning, Adrian said.
Which one?
Notre Dame Magazine. He raised his pale eyebrows.
You must have been doing research, he said. I gather you're not a subscriber.
No, she said. I went to 3 colleges, but I wouldn't call any of them my alma mater.
Where's your degree from?
Florida State, she said. Psychology. I did my first 2 years in Bloomington, then a year at Vanderbilt, and I ended up at Florida State. And that's where I got into hotels. My advisor at FSU got me a job on the front desk at the Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach.
Starting your enviable life of resort hopping.
Exactly. Adrian took another bite of her mushroom. In that article, it said Fiona had a childhood illness.
Now you know why I don't like journalists, he said.
He twirled his glass, then looked around the dining room. They were the only people eating upstairs. He hunched his shoulders and said,
Can we not talk about the article?
Adrian didn't care for his tone of voice. It was the same tone he used at work when he was telling her what to do. She was about to say something tart when the bartender appeared with a second glass of champagne. Adrian drank half of it down, questioning her decision to come on this date. This was what had happened in her relationship with Kip Turnbull in Thailand. Right before they broke up, he was micromanaging her personal life, telling her how to defog her snorkel, insisting she condition her hair with coconut milk, feeding her psychedelic mushrooms without her knowledge. That was the problem with dating the boss. They couldn't get over themselves. Adrian concentrated on her appetizer. It was pretty damn good, though now she resented the fact that Thatcher had ordered it for her, as though she weren't educated enough to select something on her own. She noticed Thatcher still wasn't eating. He was looking at her with a worried expression.
I'm sorry, he said. If you want to know something about me, you can just ask. You don't have to read about me in my alumni magazine. Most of what I tell reporters is baloney anyway.
Adrian nodded once, but only to let him know she'd heard him. She finished her mushroom and her champagne in silence and feigned interest in the photographs of sailboats on the walls. Then, when she could avoid conversation no longer, she reached for Karen's purse. I'm going to the ladies' room, she said. Where is it?
Down the hall, he said.
He stood up when she left, just like Adrian's father used to do for Rosalie. Adrian gave him points for that. The hall leading to the bathroom was adjacent to a back corridor that was used as a waiter station. Adrian noticed the folded food stands, the stacks of china and linen, the racks for the silver, the bud vases, and a plastic pitcher of white freesia stems. She eyed the computer where the waiters placed orders. Just as she was about to step into the ladies' room to check her teeth, she heard 2 female waiters talking as they trudged up the back stairs.
He hasn't been here in like 5 years, one said. And Fiona, you know, never eats anywhere.
That's not Fiona he's with tonight?
No, it's some other chick. He's not married to Fiona or anything.
Oh, I know.
Adrian made sure the waiters got a look at her before she entered the ladies' room.
Some other chick. When she returned to the table, Thatcher stood up again and remained standing. Their plates had been cleared.
The female waiters were talking about you, Adrian said.
I'm not surprised, Thatcher said. Whenever I leave the bistro at night, it's news. Are you ready?
For what? Adrian said. Where are we going?
Across the street, Thatcher said. We've just begun.
They crossed Federal Street to the Pearl, a restaurant that made Adrian feel as though she were underwater. There was a waist-to-ceiling fish tank filled with tropical fish, and the tables and chairs were very modern and sleek. The dining room had a blue glow that gave it a peaceful, floaty feeling, despite the fact that it was packed with people. Young, hip, well-dressed. The people smelled like money.
This is a C&B scene town, Thatcher said. Which isn't what we're after, but I would have taken you downstairs to the boarding house for pot stickers, except the parishes eat there every Wednesday, and I couldn't risk running into them.
No, Adrian said. She would have ended up babysitting Wolfie on her date.
Danger,
Thatcher said. Danger, danger. He put his hand up to shield his face, as though the paparazzi were after him.
Who is it?
Not the parishes.
Cat is at the foretop by the window, Thatcher said. And Leon Cross is at a deuce in the corner with a woman who is not his wife. He asked me yesterday if I would hide them away, and I said no. Why he would bring her here is beyond me.
Since you don't want to be seen with me, I could ask you the same thing.
I'm proud to be seen with you, Thatcher said. I just don't want to work on my night off.
Should we leave? Adrian asked. Before he could answer, a woman with straight black hair all the way down to her butt emerged from the crowd and pulled Thatcher and Adrian forward, as though she were granting them entrance to a hot club.
Follow me, she said.
The woman was Red Mare, Spillman's wife. She seated them at a table tucked back in the corner. Within minutes, Red Mare brought their drinks, a passion fruit Cosmo for Adrian, and a club soda with lime for Thatcher.
You're Adrian, Red Mare said. John really likes working with you, much better than with Kevin.
Didn't you think Kevin had a pole up his ass, Thatch?
Thatcher shrugged.
Sure. I'm glad you finally got smart and put a woman up front.
An attractive woman.
She touched Adrian's shoulder.
Great dress.
Thanks.
Anyway, Thatch, I know you called in your request, but the kitchen knows you're here and Chef wants to make you his 6-course Asian seafood menu.
Tell Chef thanks, Thatcher said, but we'll stick with our original plan.
Red Mare clapped her hands and held them together in front of her chest like a praying mantis.
You got it.
After she disappeared back into the beautiful crowd, Adrian said, Everyone knows you.
I've been here a long time.
12 years isn't that long.
It is when you're young. Listen, 12 years ago you were still in high school. Am I right?
You're right.
And it's a small island. The restaurant community is tight. Over the course of the summer, we'll have all the chefs in on their night off. We take good care of them. They just want to do the same.
Adrian saw Red Mare peek at them from her position by the door, checking up on them like Adrian herself did 82 times a night. Now that she worked in a restaurant, she noticed the things that other guests wouldn't. For example, the number of glasses hanging from a rack over the bar was dwindling. A few seconds later, the barback appeared with clean glasses, and a certain busser, in this case a tiny brunette, kept bumping into one of the male servers. They were obviously having a fling. Adrian might have shared these insights with Thatcher, but he, no doubt, had outgrown being amused by the behind-the-scenes of other restaurants.
"What do you do around here all winter?" she asked.
"Catch up on my sleep," he said. "And Fiona and I take a trip back to South Bend at Christmas."
Adrian had worked the last 6 Christmases, but just the thought brought the face of Doug Rydell to mind.
Those damn shearling gloves.
She drained her Cosmo. At that instant, Red Mare appeared with a second Cosmo and their food. Two tuna martinis. This is seared tuna with wasabi creme fraiche. Adrian tasted it as soon as it hit the table. The best second course on the island, she said.
If you're not eating at work, Thatcher said.
He sipped his club soda. I have a question, Adrian said, a challenge in her voice. Just breathing in the vapors from the second Cosmo sent her good judgment through the roof.
Shoot.
She had many questions, all of them provocative. Why had he been to see the priest? Why was he closing the restaurant? Why no journalists in the kitchen? But the one she chose was, how did you come to be an alcoholic? His laugh was so forceful it startled her.
Ha!
After 2 weeks, she still wasn't used to that crazy laugh.
You're trying to shock me with a direct hit, he said. And it's working.
Adrian speared a piece of tuna. Even the silverware here had a sleek design. You don't have to answer, she said. I'm at the mercy of alcohol now myself.
That was my goal, Thatcher said. Get you drunk so you forget I'm your boss.
Why do you want me to forget you're my boss?
So you'll like me?
I do like you. He stared at her a minute, then reached for her hand. She looked at the side of his face, at the clean pink skin around his ear, newly exposed from the haircut. With his other hand, he loosened his tie and undid his top button. He had barely touched his food. You're not eating, she said.
I'm pacing myself, he said. Remember, I know what's to come.
Adrian reclaimed her hand to finish her tuna, and if Thatcher wasn't going to eat, she would finish his.
I became an alcoholic as a result of the business, Thatcher said. It's an occupational hazard.
What happened?
I don't know that anything happened, he said. I was just drinking a lot every night. A couple of cocktails, a bottle of wine, a glass of port. And by the time the handbell chimed, I was sloshed. I did stupid things, forgave all the tabs at the bar, doubled the tips for the waitstaff. This made me very popular, mind you, but it was bad for our bottom line. I started AA 4 years ago. Fiona insisted.
Did she?
My behavior was threatening the business. It had to stop.
Isn't it hard, though, not drinking? Especially when you're around alcohol all the time.
At first, I tried to cut back, have one cocktail, one glass of wine, but I couldn't do it. One cocktail wasn't an option. Alcoholism is a disease, and I have it. But it's not so bad. He held up his drink. I really love club soda.
Adrian smiled and stared at Thatcher's tuna, ruby red in the frosted martini glass. She could stay here all night. She wanted to enjoy being waited on for a change. But Thatcher seemed antsy. He checked his Patek Philippe.
Time's up, he said. We're going.
At a restaurant called Oran Mor, Thatcher and Adrian hid at a tiny table tucked behind the horseshoe-shaped bar. The table had a view of the harbor and the ferry, the same ferry that Adrian had arrived on 2 weeks and another lifetime ago. A male waiter brought Adrian a glass of red wine, followed by an enormous porterhouse steak topped with Roquefort butter. Thatcher got a shallow dish of lobster risotto.
I couldn't decide between the two, he said, so we got both.
He watched Adrian take a bite of steak.
Now taste your wine.
Adrian bristled once again at being told what to do, especially since she knew he'd be right. The steak and wine were made for each other.
How's the wine?
He asked.
Incredible.
He picked up her glass and inhaled.
Big, he said. Plummy, just as they described it.
Adrian offered her steak to Thatcher, but he shook his head. Go on, she said. There can't be more after this.
He relented, then hand-fed her a bite of his risotto, and all Adrian could think was that it was a good thing no one could see them. Nothing brought more sarcasm from the waitstaff than a couple feeding each other. Adrian drank down her wine, and another glass appeared. She was officially drunk. Across the table, Thatcher was blurry. He was looking at her so intently that it took the place of conversation. "He's soaking me up," Adrian thought, whatever that meant. The more Adrian drank, the more it seemed like Thatcher himself was drunk. When she finished eating, Thatcher took her hand again. "Who are you, Adrian Dealey?" he said. "Who are you?" She didn't have anything resembling a good answer. She couldn't say, "I'm a dentist and a father," or "I'm a restaurant owner," or "I'm a chef." She couldn't even say, "I'm a childhood friend of Fiona's. I've been a friend of hers since kindergarten." She had no identity. She lived in a place for a while, working a desk, skiing bumps, visiting Buddhist temples, sitting on a sugar sand beach, making poor decisions, fudging the details of her past. And 6 months or a year later, she was somewhere else, someone else. New friends, new boyfriend, new job, new location. The most important thing in her life had been the money for her future, the money saved up for, what? Some bigger plan that she had yet to identify. Her father was right. One of these days, she was going to have to pick a place and stay there. "I'm a student of human nature," Adrian said. She was so drunk this didn't even sound corny. "I'm trying to absorb it all before I settle down." "Do you think you'll ever settle down?" Thatcher said. "Get married?" Adrian pushed her plate away. She was absolutely stuffed. She reached for her wine and held the glass with two hands. "I don't know. I've had a lot of boyfriends. There was a guy on the Cape who asked me to marry him, and I considered it for about a day and a half. Then I freaked out and flew to Hawaii. It was very immature behavior on my part." "My mother bailed on us when I was 9, Thatcher said. "My 3 older brothers were 16, 14, and 11 at the time. There is no doubt in my mind that we drove her away. We would have driven Mother Teresa away. So I used to have an issue with women who run. But I got over it. I forgave my mother. That's one thing AA really helps with, forgiveness. She lives in Toronto now, but I never see her." "Yeah," Adrian said. "My mother died when I was 12. "I didn't know your mother died," Thatcher said. "Something you said earlier made me think." "I'm sorry about that," Adrian said. "I've had a hard time talking about it, and sometimes it's just easier—" "You don't have to apologize," Thatcher said. "Maybe not to you," Adrian said. "But I've lied to a lot of people about it. I pretend my mother is still alive. I want her to be alive. Of course." Adrian placed a fingertip at the corner of her eye. "I probably don't need any more wine." Thatcher looked around the restaurant. "I was going to take you to Languedoc for the Sweet Inspirations Sunday." "It may interest you to know," said Adrian, "that the key to dessert is not sugar." She bent her head close to the table and whispered, "It's eggs." Thatcher groaned. "When a woman starts quoting Mario Subiaco, I know she's had too much to drink. No Sunday for you. Let's go for a drive." "I have to use the ladies' room," Adrian said. She nearly tripped on the uneven floor on the way to the bathroom, and when she got inside, she looked at herself in the mirror. Her cheeks were bright pink. "I am drunk," she thought. "Schnockered." She splashed her face and pulled out her dental floss. "Who are you?" Adrian Dealey. I am a person who cares about dental hygiene.
They climbed into Thatcher's silver pickup truck. His truck was impeccably clean and smelled like peppermint. Adrian fell back into the gray leather seat while Thatch fiddled with the CD player. He put on Simon and Garfunkel.
How old are you? She asked.
Old. 35.
He rummaged through the console and brought out a tire gauge.
I'm going to take you up the beach, he said. Do you have any objections to that?
None, Adrian said. The clock in the car said 10:30. She couldn't help thinking about the restaurant. Had Karen and Duncan made up? Would they be sneaking in gropes and shots of espresso, giddy with their freedom like kids whose parents were away for the weekend? Would they be playing techno on the stereo, which Thatch hated, and hogging all the crackers for themselves? Do you miss work? She asked. She noticed his cell phone sitting in the console next to the tire gauge, his ring of bistro keys, and a tin of Altoids, but he hadn't so much as checked his messages.
No, he said, starting the engine and pulling out of town. Not at all.
When Adrian next opened her eyes, she was alone in the truck. It was dark, and looking out the window, she saw nothing but more dark. Thatcher? She said. She heard a hissing noise outside her window. When she opened her door, she saw Thatcher kneeling by the front tire letting out air. From the dome light, she could see sand dunes covered with eelgrass.
This is the last one, Thatcher said.
He checked the tire with the gauge and stood up, wiping his hands on his pants. He had removed his jacket and tie, and his shirt was open another button at the neck. Where are we?
Dionys Beach, he said. Have you been here?
Adrian shook her head.
Good, he said. Hang on.
He drove the truck up over the dunes with abandon, bouncing Adrian out of her seat. Thatcher whooped like a cowboy, and Adrian prayed she didn't vomit. She had a worrisome flashback from 20 years earlier. The Our Lady of the Assumption Carnival, cotton candy, kettle corn, and the tilt-a-whirl, her mother holding back her hair in a smelly port-a-john. Then, thankfully, they were on the beach, and the water was before them, one stripe shining from the crescent moon. The beach was deserted. Thatcher parked the truck, then opened Adrian's door for her. He spread a blanket on the sand.
You came prepared, she said. Lie down, he said. But keep your eyes open.
Yes, boss, she said. After getting gracefully to the ground in her dress, Adrian looked at the stars. Thatcher lay on his side, staring at her. She closed her eyes. She could fall asleep right here, happily, happily, listening to the waves lap onto the beach. She heard Thatcher's voice in her ear.
I'm going to kiss you, if that's okay, he said.
It won't be our first kiss, she said.
No, he said. I let one slip at the restaurant. I thought about apologizing to you for that, but I didn't feel sorry.
And with that, kissed her. One very soft, very sweet kiss. The kiss was fleeting, but it left a big ache for more in its wake. Adrian gasped, taking in the cool sea air, and then Thatcher kissed her again, even softer, even shorter. The third time, he stayed. They were kissing. His mouth opened, and Adrian tasted his tongue, sweet and tangy, like the lime in his drink. She felt like she was going to burst apart into 82 pieces of desire. Like the best lovers, Thatcher moved slowly. For right now, on the blanket, it was only about the kissing. Not since high school had kissing been this intense. It went on and on. They stopped to look at each other.
Adrian ran her fingertips over his pale eyebrows. She cupped his neck inside the collar of his shirt. He touched her ears and kissed the corners of her eyes. And Adrian thought about how she had come right out with the truth about her mother at dinner, and how unusual that was. And just as she began to worry that there was something different this time, something better, of finer quality than the other relationship she had found herself in, she and Thatcher started kissing again. And the starting again was even sweeter. Yes, Adrian thought. Something was different this time. How much time passed? An hour? Two? Of lying on the blanket, kissing Thatcher Smith, the man who had handed her a new life on this island. Adrian felt herself drifting to sleep. She felt him kiss her eyelids closed. And then suddenly, like a splash of icy water, like a bolt of lightning hitting way too close, like the foul smell that wafted from the restaurant garbage, there came a noise from the car. Thatcher's cell phone. He pulled away, checked his $20,000 watch in the moonlight, and ran for the truck. He took the call standing in the deep dark a few yards behind his truck, which was smart because if he'd been closer, Adrian would have yelled at whomever was on the other end.
How dare you spoil my night!
Thatcher snapped the phone closed as he walked back toward Adrian, who was now sitting up on the blanket, headache threatening.
I don't want to hear it, she said. That was Fee.
Fiona? What did she want?
It's 12:30. My dinner is ready.
Your dinner is ready? Adrian repeated flatly. Your dinner is ready?
We eat together every night, he said.
Yes, except tonight you're on a date with me. Tonight you ate with me. As soon as she said the words, she realized he hadn't eaten. He had barely touched his food. Because he knew all along that he was going back to the bistro to eat with Fiona. Take me home, Adrian said. Take me home right now.
You're tired anyway, he said. You're practically asleep.
He tried to reach for her, but she climbed into the truck and made a point of slamming the door in his face. She fastened her seatbelt, and when Thatcher got in, she stared out the windshield at the black water of the Sound.
Don't be mad, he said.
This is weird, Adrian said. You're going back to have dinner with her. It's strange.
I realize it must seem that way.
She loves Jay-Z, Adrian said.
What do you know about it? He asked.
I saw them together yesterday, Adrian said. She left with him. She loves him.
She does love him, Thatcher said. But what I asked was, what do you know about it?
Nothing, Adrian admitted. She was coughing, and he picked her up and held her.
Okay,
Thatcher said, as if he'd made some very important point. He started the truck and eased them out over the dunes, the truck rocking gently this time, as gently as a cradle. He pulled into her driveway by 1:45. Don't bother getting out, Adrian said. I can see myself in.
I'm walking you to the door, Thatcher said.
He returned to his persona of old-fashioned suitor and took her arm. She had forgotten to leave on any lights, and so the cottage was pitch black. As they stood in the doorway, Thatcher touched the strap of her blue dress. Adrian knew she should thank him for the date. He'd gone to a lot of trouble. But she was angry, incredulous, defiant. His dinner was ready? He leaned in to kiss her, and she let him. She thought maybe she could keep him. Maybe his dinner would go cold, and Fiona would have to throw it away. They kissed and kissed. Adrian had never felt such urgency. Stay with me, she said. He pressed her against the doorframe, and for the first time she felt his body right up against hers, and it was an even better feeling, if that were possible, than the kissing. She could feel herself winning. She could see the future. His shirt coming off, her blue dress dropping into a silk puddle on the floor, the two of them entwined in Adrian's bed. Karen's shock the following morning at the espresso machine when Thatcher joined her for a short black. But then, just as Adrian knew he would, he surfaced from the pull of her desire with a gulp of air like a man who had been drowning. "Go," Adrian said. And he went.
Chapter 6, The Wine Key.
How did men do it?
It was 6:10 on Thursday night, 101 covers on the book, and Thatcher actually had the gall to knock on the door of the ladies' room where Adrian was brushing her teeth and deciding whether or not to quit.
"Come out," he said. "I need to talk to you."
Adrian shut off the water, tapped her toothbrush angrily against the side of the sink, and flung open the door.
"You have some nerve," she said.
He held up a wine key.
"I'm going to show you how to use this, now. We've waited too long."
How did he manage to look better than ever on the one night, possibly of many, Adrian had arrived at work prepared to hate him? It looked like he had gotten some sun. His face had that healthy golden glow.
"Did you go to the beach?" Adrian wanted to ask. But no, she wouldn't.
Just as she wouldn't ask him, "How was your dinner?" Though she had practiced the exact tone of sarcasm and contempt. How did he have the presence of mind to stand before her, holding up the wine key as innocuously as a door-to-door salesman? Did he not remember pressing his body up against hers the night before? Did he not remember how tenderly he kissed her eyelids closed? How did men find the nerve the next day to act as though nothing had ever happened? And it wasn't just Thatcher, Adrian conceded. She'd seen it time and time again. Over Thatcher's shoulder, Adrian saw Joe and Spillman lighting the candles. Rex began to play Old Cape Cod. Adrian rolled her eyes. She would be a brick wall. "Fine, the wine key," she said. She followed Thatcher into the wine cave. He closed the door behind them, and Adrian thought, "Okay, here it comes." The wine key was a ruse. He was going to apologize. Thatcher removed a bottle of red from the rack, Bin 41, Cannes Cuvée. They sold it by the glass as well as from the list.
"First," he said, "you have to cut the lead."
She stared at him, trying to make her eyes as hard as the point of an awl.
"Some restaurants have a special tool for this," Thatcher said. "Not us. We use the very inexpensive, very user-friendly screw pull. Wait until you see how easy this is."
He used the sharp end of the key to cut the lead, which was the metal wrapper over the cork. He pulled it off. Then he set the plastic arms of the screw pull over the cork, inserted the key, and turned the knob at the top. Turned and turned, and like magic, the cork appeared.
"A third grader could do it," he said.
He set the bottle aside and pulled out their most popular bottle of white, Manitou Salon, from an area of France near Sancerre. Adrian had heard Thatcher give the spiel on this wine before. The vintner was also the mayor of the town.
"You try," he said,
handing her the bottle and the key. She cut the lead, peeled it away, a little less seamlessly than Thatch, but she got it, set the screw pull in place, and turned. Out came the cork.
"Piece of cake?"
"Fine," she said.
"The waiters open their own wine," Thatcher said. "I open for VIPs, and I open when the waitstaff is slammed. Step in when you feel you're needed."
"Fine, fine." She dug her heel into the floor in a way that she hoped conveyed her impatience. She was wearing yet another pair of new shoes, buff-colored Jimmy Choo slingbacks, that she'd bought that afternoon in an attempt to make herself feel better.
"And there's one more thing," Thatcher said.
Something in his voice made her look at him, and their eyes locked.
"I am a brick wall," she thought. "I am a swan carved from ice."
"What's that?" she said. He held her gaze for whole seconds, a precious time. Outside the door, Adrian could hear Spillman's voice.
Has anyone seen the boss man?
Thatcher didn't move. He just held Adrian captive with his eyes, and when Adrian thought it was inevitable, they were going to kiss, he snapped out of his daze.
Champagne, he said.
He opened the refrigerator and pulled out a bottle of Laurent Perrier. He unfolded a towel from the San Katie Head Golf Club.
Up front, you'll use a side towel, or even a dinner napkin, he said.
He removed the foil from the cork, wrangled off the cage, and showed Adrian the bottle with the naked cork.
You could push at the bottom of the cork until it shoots out, but champagne corks are unpredictable. You could take out someone's eye. Best case scenario, the cork gets lost in the sand, and one of our guests with an environmental conscience writes a letter to the Inquirer and Mirror about how we here at the Blue Bistro are littering Nantucket's pristine beaches. So,
he covered the cork with the golf towel and twisted,
twist, while pulling up.
The cork came free with a muted pop. Thatcher whipped off the towel. The lip of the bottle showed a wisp of smoky carbon dioxide. He tossed the cork in the trash.
Take this out to Duncan and have him pour you a glass, he said. It's time to get to work.
So that was it. They were together in the wine cave with the door closed for 6 whole minutes, and all she'd gotten was a deep stare and a lesson in one of the world's easiest tasks. Adrian saw her options. Quit, or work as though nothing had happened. Life wasn't made any easier by the fact that everyone on the staff knew she and Thatcher had been out together, and likewise, everyone knew that Thatcher returned to the restaurant to eat with Fiona. Karen had said it best that morning while she and Duncan, reunited, drank espresso, and Adrian drank ginger lemon tea because, to add insult to injury, Adrian had a killer hangover, the worst of the summer so far. Karen had said,
"How was your date? It couldn't have been too wonderful."
And Adrian said, "There is something very fucked up going on between Thatcher and Fiona." Karen and Duncan had stared at her blankly, but when they thought she wasn't looking, they exchanged an alarmed glance. Adrian caught it and said, "And you two pissants know what's going on and you won't tell me." Karen had nodded very slowly. "They're friends," she said. And Duncan said,
"I have to go. I'm sailing with Holt Millman at 10.
Adrian tried to lose herself in the service. 101 covers on the books, but first thing there was a walk-in party of 4, dressed in workout clothes. They informed Adrian that they had arrived on their bikes after a long ride to Sconset, and they wanted to know if they could eat dinner and get back into town before dark.
"Sure," Adrian said. Table 3 was empty. It was a less desirable table, saved on slower nights for walk-ins. She sat the party, gave them the exact time of sunset along with their menus, and told them she'd have the kitchen on top of their order. The head biker palmed her $50.
"Thanks," he said. "We're really hungry."
Joe took the table.
He was psyched.
"Good work," he said. "How was your date last night?"
"What date?" she said. She was a swan carved from ice. First seating breezed by. She delivered 3 orders of chips and dip, and she opened 4 bottles of wine. She completely ignored Thatcher, and at a couple of points, she was so busy, she forgot him. In between seatings, Thatcher called her over to the podium.
"Can I brief you?"
While he talked, Adrian stared at the ceiling. Table 11 was a foretop under the awning, a good table. A local lawyer and her husband, and their friends visiting from Anchorage, Alaska. The lawyer was not Thatcher's lawyer, but she was a prominent Nantucket citizen, on the board of hospice and the Boys and Girls Club, and a regular guest, VIP. Adrian had delivered their chips and dip and opened their wine, the fantastic Lewin Chardonnay from Western Australia. Now they were eating their entrees, and Adrian saw the lawyer glancing around the dining room in distress. Adrian hurried over.
What can I help you with? She asked. The lawyer beckoned Adrian closer.
You won't believe this, she said, but my friend swears her swordfish is overcooked.
Overcooked? Adrian said. And I'll tell you what, it must be true because people from Alaska never complain. Adrian moved around the table to the Alaska woman and eyed the swordfish. It was black and shriveled.
It looked like one of the pork chops that Doug used to murder in his cast-iron skillet before he doused it with ketchup.
I'm sorry, the Alaska woman squeaked.
I'm the one who's sorry, Adrian said. Let me bring you another piece. Believe me when I say this almost never happens. She carried the swordfish to the kitchen, poking it once with her finger. It was completely dry. It had the texture of plaster. Adrian was thrilled. 2 weeks earlier, a complaint about the donuts had nearly made her weep, but today a complaint about the food was a gift from God.
She couldn't wait to confront Fiona with this hideous swordfish.
Adrian slammed into the kitchen and dropped the plate on the pass with a clatter. No one was expediting. "Where's Fiona?" she said.
"She's in the office lying down," Hector said.
Adrian deflated. Her rage was overcooked, shriveled, dry, and yet she couldn't get rid of it.
"Well, where's Antonio, then?" she asked. "It's his night off," Hector said. "Which reminds me, how was your date?"
"Fuck you," Adrian said. This set the platoon of Subiacos laughing. Adrian picked the swordfish up off the plate and flung it at Hector, who was, conveniently, working the grill. It hit him in the shoulder, smudging his white jacket.
"You killed the swordfish for 11," she said. The guest complained. In fact, she was practically in tears because it tasted so bad. "Fire another one."
"Boo-hoo," Hector said, laying a swordfish steak across the grill. Adrian marched back out to table 11.
"Sorry about the swordfish," she said. "We're going to comp your bill this evening, and I hope you'll forgive us."
The lawyer touched Adrian's wrist.
"You don't have to comp the meal," she said.
"Oh, yes," Adrian said. "Yes, I do." A few moments later, table 6, a deuce, guest from the Nantucket Beach Club, called Adrian over. "No lobster on the lobster club." What they showed her was a $29 BLT.
"Please," Adrian said, picking up the plate. "Let me get you some lobster meat, and your dinner tonight is on the house."
The third table she comped because the top of the butterscotch creme brulee was scorched. The guest hadn't even complained, but Adrian saw the desserts go out, and she saw the black spots. She had an infuriating vision of Mario back in his lair doing the bossa nova while he took a welding tool to the custard. The dessert was going to a table of 6, which meant a tab of at least $1,000. Adrian bought their dinner. The revenge was so sweet, it made her dizzy. Later, Thatcher cornered her at the podium. It was 11:15. She had a line of 5 people. The bar was packed, but unusually quiet.
"You comped 3 meals," he said. "One tab was $1,200. Because that 6 top was drinking a Chateau Margaux."
Adrian shrugged. The food was bad tonight. Fiona wasn't expediting. "You should have seen the swordfish at 11. It was a piece of drywall."
"I understand the swordfish, and that was Lee Stanford's table, and I would have comped it myself. But a piece of lobster missing? A bad creme brulee?"
The lobster missing was a table Max sent us, and the brulee looked like it had the bubonic plague. "At the beginning of the season, you told me that close to perfect wasn't going to cut it."
"I did, but to comp a $1,200 dinner?"
"During the first seating, I took a walk-in foretop that one of your other managers probably would have turned away because they weren't wearing Armani. They drank 2 bottles of Cristal and had a $1,000 tab themselves. Take the difference out of my salary." Thatcher sighed.
"I'm not going to take it out of your salary," he said. "All 3 tables left huge tips, so the waitstaff loves you.
and I know you did what you thought was right. He nodded at the kitchen. I'm going to eat.
Adrian didn't answer. She was crushed. He didn't even care enough to fight with her.
2. Dr. Dawn at toothache.com. From Addie12177@hotmail.com. Date, June 16th, 2005, 9:14 a.m. Subject,
surprise!
I sent you the last of the money I owe you. Not bad for 2 weeks of work. And your interest should arrive at the office tomorrow morning. Bon appetit, and thanks for always being there for me. Love.
2. Kira Crenshaw at mindspring.com. From Addie12177@hotmail.com. Date, June 16th, 2005, 9:37 a.m. Subject,
first date of the summer.
I can honestly say I would rather go out with drug abuser and felon Doug Rydell than ever go out with my boss again. Doug may have stuck my life savings up his nose and robbed my place of employment, but at least he didn't leave me stranded for another woman.
Business notes. The Inquirer and Mirror, week of June 17th, 2005. Blue Bistro up for sale. Harry Henderson of Henderson Realty, Inc. announced late last week that Blue Bistro owners Thatcher Smith and Fiona Kemp have put the popular waterfront restaurant on the market for $8.5 million. Mr. Smith was quoted as saying, "This is a classic case of quitting while we're ahead." Rumors have circulated that Smith and Kemp are looking for another property on the island, and that they have expressed interest in sloops on Steamship Wharf, which they hope to turn into a chic cafe called Calamari.
While we feel that space is currently underutilized, Smith says, the rumors are absolutely untrue.
The only certain plan Smith and his partner, Ms. Kemp, have in the works, he says, is a trip to the Galapagos Islands in October. Ms. Kemp could not be reached for comment. For Father's Day, Adrian bought her father a gas grill from the Williams-Sonoma catalog and a box of Omaha steaks. It cost her over $700, but money, now, was the least of her worries. The balance in her bank account was steadily growing, and she had paid off her $1,300 debt to her father. If for the money alone, she was going to keep her job. A week had passed, and Thatcher hadn't said a word about their date. Of course, Adrian hardly gave him a chance. She spoke to him in only the most perfunctory way, in only the most professional capacity, and he returned the favor. With each passing day, the evening of their date faded into yesterday's news. Adrian tried to regard it as a failed experiment, a fallen souffle. She had broken Rule 3, and she was paying the price. So now, it was back to the straight and narrow. If she felt bruised, her heart, her ego, she was going to make sure that no one could tell. She did a crisp, clean job on the floor. She handed out menus, delivered the chips and dip, ran food, opened wine, processed credit cards, and worked the door without compassion. Tyler Lefroy informed her that patrons of the bar called her the Blue Bitch. That made her smile for the first time since Deanna's Beach. What she needed, she told herself, was a life apart from the restaurant, and so she started jogging in the mornings. She ran to Surfside Beach, she ran to Cisco Beach, she ran along Miacomet Pond. She rode her bike to the Rotary and ran along the Pulpus Road. One day she ran to the restaurant. The Sid Wainer truck was in the parking lot, and Adrian saw Fiona and Jay-Z sitting in the back of the truck talking, their legs dangling over the edge. She ran on Cliff Road past Tuppency Links and the water tower, out to Eel Point where the road turned to dirt. Every way she went, Nantucket revealed its beauty. The Rosa rugosa was blooming pink and white. The ponds were blue, the eel grass razor sharp. The beaches were clean and still not crowded. The island had a lot more to offer, Adrian told herself, than just Thatcher Smith. One morning, Adrian ran all the way out to Medaket Harbor, which was too far on a hot day. She bought a cold Evian at the West Ender before she embarked on her limp home. She was on the bike path by Long Pond when a green Honda Pilot stopped. The tinted passenger window went down.
"Do you need a lift?" the driver asked.
It was a man in his 40s with dark hair, the exact kind of person one imagined offering candy to an unsuspecting young girl. "No thanks," Adrian said, waving the empty water bottle. "I'm fine."
"You sure?"
"All set."
"It's awfully hot. I can drop you in town. It'll take 3 minutes."
Adrian looked at her dusty shoes. The soles of her feet burned. The guy was right. It was hot. She was out of water, and she had 3, maybe 4 miles to go. She noticed a child's car seat in the back of the Pilot, so he probably wasn't a serial killer, and he couldn't exactly abduct her on Nantucket. "Okay," Adrian said. "Thanks." She climbed in. The air conditioning was a blessing. The man put up her window and hit the gas.
"I'll just drop you in town," he said. "I'm headed in to pick up my mail."
"Fine." He hummed along to a song on the radio. Adrian sat up very straight to avoid sweating all over his car.
"You don't recognize me, do you?" the man said.
Adrian fumbled with her Walkman, and it fell to the floor. She bent over to retrieve it, trying not to panic. She slid in a sideways look. He looked familiar, but she met so many people on a nightly basis that...
"Drew Amon Keller," he said.
Adrian glanced up. "Drew Amon Keller?" Adrian studied his face. The lips she recognized, but the rest was different. Hadn't he had a beard? And an awful pair of glasses?
"I'm sorry," she said. "You look different."
"I shaved," he said. "My wife insists that I shave in the summer."
"You're married?" Adrian asked.
3 kids, he said. Adrian stared out the window. They were passing the landfill. She prayed to see another car, but they seemed to be the only one on the road. She tried to parse her fear. The guy was a freelance journalist, not a criminal, and it wasn't as though he was stalking her. He was on his way to the post office.
"You can just drop me off here if you want," Adrian said.
"At the dump? I can walk home. It's not far."
"Did Thatcher tell you not to talk to me?"
A car approached, a red Jeep Wrangler with the top down, 2 very tan college boys with a couple of surfboards strapped to the roll bars. They were gone before Adrian could think of how to signal for help. What, she wondered, would Thatcher do if he'd learned she'd accepted a ride from Drew Amon Keller? And why did she care what Thatcher thought?
"I know what's going on with Fiona," he said. "I've known for years. What she and Thatcher don't understand is that I want to help. I have an offer on the table from the Atlantic Monthly if Fiona ever agrees to talk to me. Sometimes by writing a feature in a big magazine, you can create positive change."
Adrian squeezed her water bottle in the middle, making a plastic crunch. This was the guy who had sent her to the bistro in the first place. He'd set her up, maybe, hoping she'd spy on Fiona and report details back to him. But what kind of details was he after, exactly?
"I have no idea what you're talking about," she said.
Drew Amon Keller took his eyes off the road for a split second to look at Adrian. She noticed something funny about the bottom half of his face. It was pink and raw-looking where he'd shaved, as though he'd stripped off a mask. He downshifted and signaled to the left.
"Here's Cliff Road," he said. "Is it okay if I drop you here?"
"I thought you were going to take me into town," Adrian said.
"Are you trying to get rid of me now?"
He laughed.
"I'm happy to take you to town," he said.
He pulled back onto the road and turned up the radio.
Adrian collapsed back in the seat.
You're happy to take me to town, but you won't tell me what's going on in the restaurant where I'm the assistant manager.
You must think I'm pretty naive.
I think no such thing. Despite the air conditioning, Adrian was hot and thirsty
and angry.
I went on a date with Thatcher last week, she said. But Fiona called at midnight and told Thatcher his dinner was ready, and he left me at my front door. Adrian watched Drew Ammon Keller for a reaction, but he had none. She kicked his glove compartment and left a mark with her filthy shoe. The restaurant was turning her into a lunatic, the kind of person who confided in strangers and disrespected their brand new cars. You told me if I ever wanted to talk, I should call you. You gave me your card. I still have it at home.
Good, he said. Hold on to it.
I don't suppose you'll write an article about my date with Thatcher.
No, he said.
No, Adrian echoed. Girl likes boy, boy likes different girl. He'd heard it 1,000 times before. Everyone had. There were only 2 people in the restaurant whom Adrian trusted, and one of those people was Mario. This might have seemed counterintuitive, as Mario's reputation among the staff was for being exactly the opposite, untrustworthy, fickle, a scoundrel. He had dumped Delilah by kissing another woman on the dance floor of the Chicken Box while he was there on a date with Delilah. Delilah had cried for 3 days, and she begged Duncan to defend her honor. Duncan said,
I told you not to go near the guy in the first place.
Mario was deadly as a lover, but as a friend, he had a curiously golden touch. The afternoon of her ride with Drew Ammon Keller, Adrian marched back into pastry.
It looks like someone could use a popsicle, Mario said.
He pulled a tray out of the freezer and handed Adrian a creamy raspberry banana popsicle, then took one for himself. They licked the popsicles leaning side by side against the marble counter.
They're good, yeah? Mario said.
Yeah, she said. She bit off a big piece and it gave her an ice cream headache. She moaned. Mario rubbed the inside of her wrist.
This is supposed to help, he said.
You just want to touch me, she said.
You got that right.
She said, Do you know what's going on between Fiona and Thatcher? He dropped her arm.
There's nothing going on.
Adrian threw her popsicle stick into the trash. You're lying to me.
No,
Mario said. He moved down the counter to where the dough for the Portuguese rolls was proofing. He worked the dough with his hands.
I would not lie to you. There's nothing going on the way you're thinking.
How do you know what I'm thinking?
I always know what the ladies are thinking.
So if it's not what I'm thinking, then what is it?
I wish I could tell you, Mario said.
The other person Adrian trusted was Karen, but only during certain times of the day. Mornings after Duncan left, in the Jetta on the way to work, as they listened to Moby.
I am not a jealous person, Karen said, one morning after 4 espressos, which was enough to make even her tremble. You haven't known me for very long, so you'll have to take my word for it. Usually I eat men for breakfast.
I can tell, Adrian said.
I'm a biting bitch.
You're strong.
Right. Except not with Duncan. I've known him 12 years, and I've seen him do all kinds of outrageous things with women at the bar. And before, it was always funny. But now it's awful. They all want to sleep with him, even the married ones. He says he's in it for the money,